Good morning and welcome to our program, Our American Heritage. I am the host of the program, Arch Hunter, and it's our desire at American Heritage to explore in depth the American experience from its beginning to the present. Understanding the story and the history of this great nation is paramount in understanding our greatness. So today we're pleased to welcome back as our very special guest, Lydia Nuttall. Lydia, thank you for coming back and sharing again with us today.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure, Arch.
Lydia is an author of American Forgotten Stories. Lydia, are you still the vice president of We the Kids?
Nope. I'm just okay. An executive board member of We the
Kids. Executive board member. Lydia is writing curriculum for an organization, and we've been discussing her writing of that curriculum, and we just were really beginning to delve into her first chapter in our first episode. So Lydia, if you could briefly share again your educational background and how you went from your undergraduate degree to becoming an author and historian.
Okay, let's see how briefly I can do this time. So
this will be, ladies and gentlemen, that would be a miracle. You know, Lydia Nuttall and brief is 180 degrees.
It's all good. So I graduated in interior design. So how the heck does an interior design major wind up writing a family-friendly resource on early American history to help our youth appreciate and value being an American and our founding documents and those that sacrificed everything so you could have liberty, and now writing new chapters, new lessons, but we're calling them chapters because, as we discussed in a previous show, if you say, kids, we're going to have a lesson on ... their eyes are going to glaze over. And yet if you say, hey, we want to do another chapter in this then maybe there's a higher chance of them wanting to learn more about what's so great about America. That's the new thing that I am writing, family-friendly brief lessons that you can do at the dinner table. You can even do them in your car, Arch. Did you know that? You can even do them in the car.
Wow.
And when you have downtime with your kids to teach them these principles of liberty that I know they're not teaching in schools. I know it because my kids used to go to public ed and they never learned it. I never learned it. I didn't know the difference between the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution. And I know for a fact some of our State Board of Education members in the past here in Utah didn't either. They were quoting things from the Declaration of Independence saying that that they were in the Constitution. And I just thought, oh, we're in a world of hurt. We're in deep doo-doo if our own leaders don't understand what our laws are. If you don't know what the laws are, or the rules are for playing a game of basketball, how well is that game going to go if everyone kind of plays by their own rules? And that's kind of what's happening. Not kind of, it is what's happening in this country because we don't know what our laws are.
Mm-hmm. In your first chapter that you're writing this curriculum, celebrating the American story, and the first principle that you talked about is what is so great about America, and immediately it's liberty. Can you explain that farther? Because, you know, we had a fair amount of liberty as colonists, but it was not as much as we wanted. What does that liberty to Americans look like compared to, say, so to speak, quote unquote, liberty in other nations?
Well, if we're going to ground this discussion on what happened to British Americans when we were under the rule of Great Britain, under the rule of King George III, that's why we erupted in a war against Britain, because we felt we had the same rights as British Americans. Mm-hmm. And yet we were realizing, wait a minute, the king and parliament just took those rights away from us, this right and that right and another right. And then we'd say, wait a minute, stop. We're British Americans. We're your brethren. You need to treat us as British Americans. We have the same rights that you do. And maybe Parliament would subside for a little while and say, okay, all right. But then they'd make it even worse the next time, take away more rights and more rights and more rights. In fact, the Declaration of Independence gives 27 examples of rights that they should have had as British Americans, but that the King of Great Britain, George III, took away. And so that's why we wound up fighting against, well, actually, the king declared war upon us, right?
That's a great point that we historians can debate.
Okay, well,
either way, but there was a war over this.
There was a war. We can agree on that one. So with that, because it's like anything, if someone takes an inch and you let them take that inch, what are the chances they're going to take another inch? Mm-hmm. What are the chances after that they're going to take a foot or a yard or a mile? And so after we discovered our form of government back then, a monarchy, was taking away by the inch and then by the foot, all these rights that we had to do something. And that something escalated to becoming a war. And so the importance, the big thing that I would love everyone to understand, is all that can be so boring. In fact, for me, even to be called a curriculum writer just sounds like, ooh, cringe. I even want to wither and die at the word curriculum, right?
Right.
This is more of an adventure in discovering the truth and the reality as much as we can, using primary source documentation, using our founding documents and letters that our founders wrote to each other, et cetera, to piece together best we can what really happened and what were they really like? Why did we even fight a Revolutionary War? And because, and bottom line, it's because our rights were being taken away. And when you have less and less and less, and ultimately then no rights, you no longer have liberty. You're living as a slave to other men and women who are then the boss of you. Didn't you hate that when you were a kid? When someone say, you're not the boss of me, or actually as an adult,
oh, boy.
Say to you, you're not the boss
that.
Of me, or, you know, well, nobody really likes that. I know someone has to be the leader, but if a leader rules, or maybe we shouldn't use the rules, if a leader governs with respect to the rights of the people, then ultimately you can create a society, everybody, a society where there is peace, there's order, there's more unity and liberty, and the ability to pursue happiness and to prosper expands. And so that's what I feel like we're all wanting as a people, as mankind, is we want more peace, right? We want liberty. We want to prosper. We want to be able to provide for ourselves and our family and get ahead. And we all want to be happy. And right now, I'm not seeing a whole lot of peace, a whole lot of prosperity, and definitely not a whole lot of happiness as, among our society as a whole in America. Right.
One of the points in your first chapter, and I want to read it, and then if you would elaborate on this, please, is that America is founded upon principles that, when applied, can establish liberty, peace, prosperity, and happiness for all mankind.
Ooh, isn't that a bold statement?
Well, you made it. So
I know. I better. You're asking bold. Me to back it up, Lydia.
Not back it up. Expound on that, please, because I can see it goes in so many different directions.
Yeah, it really can. Okay, so in a world, in a society today that advocates for there's your truth and there's my truth and there's someone else's truth and da 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 da, I would like to give some pushback to that, in the sense that if there is no truth, if truth itself is relative, depending on whoever's truth it is, then that is a recipe for a lot of disunity and disaster and the opposite of peace, because then everyone's gonna be fighting for their own truth, right? So what if we just found principles that were true, because based on how well they've worked in the past, right? You think that sounds good? Like, can we establish a principle backed up by things in the past that have actually worked? And that's what our founders did. They researched past governments, histories of other nations, et cetera, to see what for the ones that worked, what worked. And that's what we want to implement in our country. And the things that didn't work, let's not implement those in our country. So there are actual different principles. There are principles that establish liberty, peace, prosperity, and happiness if learned and followed. There are also principles that will establish the opposite of liberty, which is bondage, slavery, servitude. The opposite of peace, which is civil unrest, discord, war. The opposite of prosperity, where everyone's in debt, you know, or doesn't even have enough to provide the basics of food, clothing, and shelter for yourself and your family. And the opposite of happiness, which is misery, right? There's opposite things that we can do that promote that. So I'm dedicated to discovering what are those principles that establish liberty, peace, prosperity, and happiness, because that's the kind of environment, world, community, nation that I want for my kids and my grandkids to live in.
When you talked about the truth, am I assuming correctly that you have the understanding that our founders, when they gave us the Constitution, that was the truth upon which we needed to continue to have this country?
Let's just say they gave us the best they got, you know, for all the knowledge that they had at that point in time. Right. Well, that's why they put in there, hey, you guys can amend this. And here's the process.
Right.
Because we admit the fact that, you know, we don't have the crystal ball into our future. And there might be something that we just didn't get or understand or even know could possibly even exist in the future. So future posterity, you can amend this. There is a set way to do it, but you can amend this.
And I was thinking, I probably didn't word it correctly, that this is what they saw the truth to govern our nation. But they, as you said, they also allowed for, if we didn't cover it all, we can add to it. Is that, am I thinking
yes.
correctly?
Yes, and I will emphasize one more thing. They were Christians, which means, everyone, they believed in a standard of truth in the Bible. They believed in a God, a higher power, and they wanted to base a government on the higher, on God's principles of liberty, right? So they used heavily the principles of liberty taught in the Bible. And believe it or not, yeah, the Bible, the Old Testament especially, teaches those principles, because there's chapters in there. There's entire books in there, the Exodus, for example, that teaches how an entire nation was enslaved. And how the ruler of them, the Pharaoh, said, hey, these are my people. And that's the whole thing of, you know, the Red Sea parting and Moses and everything, is there were two conflicting ideologies here. There was Pharaoh's who said, these people are mine because I'm the ruler. They're my people. And whatever I do is right. And I can use them however I want. And Moses saying, actually, according to the God who, you know, he's everyone's God, he's even yours. And you're going to find out pretty soon from all these plagues, who's really the boss of you? It's God. You're not the ultimate power. You're not the rising and morning star or whatever, you know, if you've ever seen Prince of Egypt. He said, these are God's people, and God wants them free. And so you have a whole chapters in the Bible that give principles of liberty, and are, because the founders were Christian and believed in the Bible, they still may have argued over different things. You know, some had slaves, some didn't, et cetera. We can talk about that one later, but ultimately they used the Bible for coming up with our form of government, with understanding human nature and being able to form a government based on human nature that would put checks and balances on the human nature's desire to rule and reign with, you know, ultimate authority and take away the rights of the people. They made it so that whoever was ruling, number one, they didn't have all the power. Is divided among them. And then there were checks and balances. And by the way, no one gets in power unless it's through the consent of the governed, you know, the people. People have to put you in power, which means they can also take away that power.
And listeners, before our program, Lydia and I were talking about that we don't necessarily agree on everything, nor do we have to, but it's a sense of, do we have that graciousness to listen to another point of view and listen to the reasons why that person has that particular view, even though we might have a different slant on, you know, that viewpoint, which is, unfortunately, we have seemed to have lost that in our nation today, of the ability to be gracious towards another viewpoint and not just shut the door on them and walk away. So
that's my viewpoint based on everything I've studied.
And we could do a whole, we need to do another whole couple of shows on America and Christianity and the founding of our nation, because that's just a fascinating study that we could, you know, go into if you would be so amenable to ever come in.
Sure. And so now that you bring that point up, that, you know, the previous discussion we had, that sometimes we, Arch and I, don't even agree with each other. I'm like, okay, what part of what I said do you, from what you studied, that you could give me some pushback? Like, for instance, I really don't know if all of them were Christian. I don't know. I really don't know if all of them believed in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if they all did? I know predominantly, you know, those are the principles that are the foundation, became the foundation for our form of government. But hey, our audience, I'm sure, would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I believe that our documents, our Constitution, our founders had were based on biblical principles. I will go that far. But whether they all had a Christian viewpoint of life, I don't think I see that not all of them did, but they had this,
I'll go with that.
You know, they had this sense of understanding that our country should be founded with a document that had biblical principles to it, whether they were Roman Catholic, Protestant, Jewish Americans.
Yes.
Here are principles that are founded in the scriptures, which most people today, a lot of people, they won't even recognize, you know, of that. So, but that's talk to us about chapter 2 with the keystone of liberty, because this one really caught me when I read that. The keystone of liberty. I kept thinking, what exactly is that? So share with our listeners, please, what you meant by that, or and expand on that, please.
Absolutely. So everyone hang tight. If you are not familiar with what a keystone is, the best I can say is if you can think of one of those ancient Roman arches made of stone, how they start stacking stones up one side of maybe a pathway and stones up on opposite on another side, on the other side of the pathway. And then they start curving towards each other. Well, the very last stone that you put in place to hold the one side of the arch up and the other side of the arch up, because now they're leaning against each other with the keystone in the middle, that's a keystone. So you can imagine what happens or could happen if you take that keystone out. What's going to happen to one or the other or both sides arch?
Mm-hmm. It would totally fall apart.
Yeah, it's going to fall apart. And so to me, keystone, the keystone of liberty in our country is a belief that God is the source of our basic rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Not a man, not a woman, not a group of men or a group of women or a group of men and women. You know, it's they don't have the power to take away those rights, because those rights are given to everybody by a higher power that we call God in our country. And evidence of this, that God is the keystone of liberty in our country, is first, our national motto is what, Arch?
In God we trust.
Yep. And how about there's a part in our Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, one nation under God. And then how about, most of us don't know all the verses to the Star-Spangled Banner, which is our national anthem. Mm-hmm. But one of the verses says, may the heaven rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. And when you read the words of, for instance, George Washington, who was General Washington at the time, who helped us win our independence from Great Britain and to become our own nation, so many times he said, you know, I'd like to thank divine providence, is how he referred to God or the Almighty God or this higher power for preserving us, because sometimes I had nowhere and no one else to rely upon to win this war than that God, than divine providence. And so let's do this. Let's, just as you could imagine the arch falling apart if you took out the keystone that's holding two ends of the arch together, imagine pulling God out from our national motto and the Pledge of Allegiance. So who would you replace God with?
No.
And you know, in blank, we trust. Who else could you trust? Or one nation under blank. You know, who could you trust? So, and whoever you put there, could you trust your replacement to protect the life, liberty, and ability to pursue happiness of those who look different or have different beliefs than your replacement? What about those whom your replacement doesn't like for whatever reason? Could that person still... could we all trust in that person to protect my rights, for example, or your rights? Mankind are fallible. I can't trust anybody as much as I can trust God.
Well, yeah, he's the immutable.
Yes. So that is the keystone of liberty. If you believe that anyone else, if there is no higher power than mankind, a ruler, a governor, a president, a teacher, etc. If you don't believe there's any higher power than you, then you become God.
Right.
And when you become God, anything goes.
And that is the whole crux, Lydia, of what I was looking at when I was reading the Keystone of Liberty. Because today we debate, and I don't know why it's debatable, so many people are afraid of when we say we were endowed by our Creator. The Creator might mean something to you that means something else to someone else and someone else and someone else. And we have lost the idea of our founders believed that our rights came from the Creator. However that is defined by an individual or a specific religion is not the point that our founders were debating. They were making a statement that these liberties that we have, these rights, come from the Creator, God. And so we have seemed to have lost that when people get so upset with, well, you're perpetrating your religious belief on me. No, it's right there in the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that in creating this one chapter to help our youth understand that our rights come from a higher power, and the founders called him God, is they used four different ways to call this higher power. They used nature's God, mm-hmm. creator, supreme judge of the world, and divine providence. So I love that, because someone might resonate more with, oh, nature's God, because nature didn't just, well, to me, didn't just, if your cell phone can't come together in your hand by just osmosis or some, I don't know, just magical powers, just come together in your hand and be able to do all these amazing things our cell phones do. If that didn't come together, I'm not phrasing this right. It came together because they were creators, right? It mm-hmm. didn't just happenstance appear in your hand, your cell phone. The same thing with nature. It didn't just come together by happenstance. There's a creator. If we believe there's a creator of our phones, I hope that would help us understand the possibility really extremely strongly is out there that there is a creator of nature, of our world, our earth, right? So mm-hmm. if nature's God doesn't resonate to you, that there's a higher power that you could call nature's God or a creator, or how about a supreme judge or divine providence, then, you know, I just thought it was really interesting how they refer to this higher power four different ways mm-hmm. to reach anybody who's reading, right. not just an American. How about an atheist? How about a Jew? How about right. someone who believes in Buddha or Hindu or whatever? Bottom line is he's the source of our unalienable rights. If right. you're a human, he's the source of it.
And our rights come from that creator, or however someone wants to define that particular in their personal religious beliefs or non-religious beliefs. I love when I keep reading this, the Keystone of Liberty, the part of the preamble that immediately I thought of was that part when it says, and to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. And how important is that in what you are doing, not only for trying to educate this generation, but educating us so the next generation can also have this wonderful idea of this blessings of liberty that we live in.
Yeah, what a gift. And all we need to do, if you want your children to more fully value the gift of liberty and even yourself, can I make some reading recommendations really quick before I close? There are three books.
We have about 30 seconds left, so awesome. Go for it.
Here we go. Red Scarf Girl. Everyone get your pen, paper out, your phone. Put it in your phone. Red Scarf Girl by G. Lee Jing. It's J-I-L-I, and her last name is J-I-A-N-G. She's from China. This is her experience being raised during the Cultural Revolution in China. She saw liberty, and then she saw it taken away. Also, there's The Hiding Place. That's a popular one by Corey ten mm-hmm. Boom in Germany. And Night by Ellie. I think it's Ellie. I don't know how to pronounce the name. Ellie Wiesel. It's W-I-E-S-E-L is his last name. L-E-E-L-I-E. Mm-hmm. Night. And these are great examples of what it's like to live when you don't have liberty. It will help your children value what we have here in America.
Yes, thank you. Well, Lydia, again, time just goes by so quickly. So again, thank you for sharing with us. And I hope you'll come back and we'll talk more about the other chapters in this curriculum that you're writing. So before we leave again, please share with our listeners where they'd be able to purchase your book, Forgotten American Stories.
It's ForgottenAmericanStories.com, ForgottenAmericanStories.com. And the things that Art and I are discussing is something new that's not quite out yet. But you get the honor and privilege of hearing it first.
So listeners, again, Lydia, thank you. Again, thank you for your passion for America, for your passion, for your love for your country, for the passion that you have to share the knowledge of our founding documents and how important they are to us. And so that we're able to pass that on to our posterity and share with them the blessings of liberty. So again, thank you for coming and sharing with us again today.
So welcome.
That's it. This is WFYL 1180, Working for Your Liberty.
Da-na-na-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na-na-na.